And it's time for our first Sunday political debate. Here it is, the first Sunday, July 3rd. Of all Sundays, the weekend of the American birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, America, and all of those good things. With us, Jim Pomeroy, Republican. Nicholas Sawalk, who is a Libertarian. Jennifer Doggan, Democrat. Eric Mickelson, Green Party. And our special guest is Representative Eleanor Holmes Norton, Democrat for the District of Columbia. Good morning, Mrs. Norton.
Good morning, Jerry.
I might be the only friend in the room you have, Mrs. Norton.
Sure you are. Yeah, with that lineup of characters, I'm sure you are.
Whoa, I love it.
Look, I love a good debate, but everybody, I am about to depart for the OFCE meeting. The parliamentarians from all of Europe, 55 nations, have just passed a resolution admonishing our country. It's their first meeting here in the United States, to give equal voting rights for the residents of the District of Columbia. We're the only capital in the democratic world where there are no congressional voting rights. That's one of the reasons why the Congress had the audacity to try to overturn one of our laws that is opposed by everybody in the District of Columbia, our mayor, our police chief, all of our city council, and a virtually unanimous city. Now, if anybody on your panel thinks that's the American way, or we can stand up in bodies around the world, international bodies, or invade other countries in order to bring them democracy with this state of affairs in our own country, then they should speak up right now, because I'm not going to be here real long.
Well, okay. Jim Pomeroy?
Well, I mean, I guess my question would be, I mean, it's in the Constitution, it's in the Constitution, the district status. But my question is, with the Democrats had been in control of Congress for so many decades, why didn't the Democratic Party see it fit to give D.C. voting rights? It seems to me it was bipartisan that everyone agreed that this is the way you get D.C. voting rights is you go and get a constitutional amendment. And I think that's what you should try to do.
Well, first of all, as far as international bodies are concerned, when Russia gets up or Iraq gets up and says it's in our Constitution, they get the Bronx cheer from the whole world. So let's not hear about the Constitution, first of all. Secondly, this is a problem and a responsibility and a blame on both parties. What can be said about the Democrats is they did bring us home rule, which the Republicans have been bent on violating. They and the Republicans together, a majority, of course, of the Democrats, but many Republicans voted for a constitutional amendment, and that passed out of the House and Senate in 1976, but it did not get the three-quarters necessary of the states. And, of course, Democrats have supported equal voting rights now for many decades with Republicans on the other side.
Well, I thought Congressman Davis has been very helpful toward giving you more representation, or more active.
And I give him all credit. He at least is for half of our rights, which is more than I can say for most Republicans. Tom Davis has supported home rule. He supported us last week against the overthrow of one of our laws, and he has said that at least in the body in which he serves, that we ought to have the full vote. We are third per capita in federal income taxes. We have fought and died in every war, including the war that established our nation, the war from which taxation from no representation comes. I've gone to funerals in Iraq, and if anybody on the panel has constituents who rank among the 50 states, and here I'm comparing us with the 50 states, higher than third per capita and federal income taxes that support our government, let that person speak up now.
Eric, Delegate Norton, I was glad to see you speaking out the other day at the rally in D.C. and raising awareness about the issue, because I think a lot of Americans aren't aware that D.C. lacks voting representation in Congress. But I wonder, this has been going on for decades at this point. Do you ever sense a point when the tactics used by folks who are interested in voting representation should escalate to some further level, as far as, you know, we can educate and ask Congress all we want, but what's the next step?
Well, I mean, I don't blame you for asking that. When we've not had your rights for over 200 years, it's true that, you know, you have to get a moment in time when things burst forward. I mean, I'm a black American who went to segregated schools here, and I remember as a teenager is saying, why in the world have they taken this stuff this long? You know, segregation had been the rule in our country since its existence. It took a confluence of events, international events, and yes, escalation. But that was the escalation of virtually the whole country. It was black people in the entire South, brilliant, nonviolent movement. Here we are in one city where, and here's the most frustrating statistic of all, 82% of Americans believe we ought to have equal voting rights, two senators and a representative. And when told we don't, but most believe we already have that. So Congress hasn't figured out, most Americans would be ashamed to think that anybody paid taxes or went to war and didn't have the representation to vote on war or to vote on taxes.
How in the world did most Americans get out of history class without understanding how the Congress works people get representatives?
It's the same way they got out without knowing who their senators are today and who their representative is.
It is a shame.
Jennifer Dalton.
Congresswoman Norton, first of all, good morning and happy 4th of July.
Thank you.
I just wonder if you feel that there may have been an opportunity lost when the dialogue for the war in Iraq, for those who supported it, shifted from weapons of mass destruction to freedom and the constitutional process that's existing there. If you think that part of the, if an opportunity may have been lost there to equate that with the men and women, particularly from the district, who are fighting there for freedom and for voting rights for people and don't have that here in Washington.
No, interestingly enough, in January, when the House reconvened, three young men, one of them happens to work in my office. He had spent a year in Iraq. He had just gotten back. He and two of his buddies, it was really his idea, said, well, you know, is there something I can do for voting rights, having just been on, he's literally on the front lines. The people who went in cleared the things that blow you up on the road as the trucks moved in. I remember that in 1994, in the early 90s, I had come to Congress as a constitutional lawyer. I wrote a memo and the Democrats were in power, that asked the Congress to give me the right to vote in the Committee of the Whole, because I have the full voting committee, and by analogy, it seemed clear that the Committee of the Whole created by the Congress could also give me the right to vote. The Democrats were in power. They said, oh, my goodness, we've never heard of this. They sent it to an outside lawyer. The outside lawyer said, at your discretion, you can do it. They did it. The Republicans sued all the way to the Court of Appeals. I voted in the Committee of the Whole. As you know, there are some votes you can't vote because they're in like rule, that they're in the full House. Republicans took control, took my vote. Imagine on the world stage what they think about that, taking somebody's vote legitimately won and approved by the courts. So this year, these young men asked to have a meeting with the speaker, private meeting, and with the minority leader. The minority leader gave them a meeting. The speaker, they ultimately said speaker or someone on his staff. It looked as though at least somebody on his staff, because somebody called my office and said, how do you reach these young men? The bottom line is that the speaker and nobody on his staff met with, that is to say, they refused to meet with these three young men from the District of Columbia who had gone on the front lines to fight in Iraq. That was only to get themselves the vote in the Committee of the Whole back.
Congresswoman Norton, getting back to one issue that you're very concerned with, and that is the repealing of the gun ban. The vote now goes to the Senate. How do you think what do you think the outcome will be?
Well, I think we have a very decent chance of getting this out of our appropriation.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that it wasn't, remember, this is the House that repealed the gun ban last year, and the Senate stopped it.
Right.
This year, we were able to get enough support so that repeal didn't even get in our appropriation. So Mark Souder was driven back to one provision, and a provision that is nonsensical given what he said it was the purpose, which is defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
This provision says you can have a shotgun loaded. That means that a lot of kids might well, because that's what happens with loaded guns. But it doesn't mean that you can have much luck if somebody breaks in and you pull out your long gun in order to stop them. That's why the whole point was handgun.
Therefore,
I think that when the Senate looks and sees that this is on our appropriation, which most in the Senate don't believe is the way to go at legislation, and we should consider that this doesn't help anybody defend themselves very much, that we're going to be able to get this off of our appropriation, and I'm going to certainly try to do that.
Okay, very quickly.
Ms. Norton, I have to ask you, why is it that you don't support allowing the residents of the district to stop being second-class citizens and have the same self-defense rights that the other 279 million Americans have? A shotgun for home defense is actually quite often used in other jurisdictions with lower crime rates.
I don't know where you're from, but where I am from, the mayor, the city council, unanimously, and virtually every Washingtonian have voted otherwise. You know, if you want to have them where you're from in a government that believes in local control, that is your right. As to the Second Amendment, this law has been tested ever since 1976 and has been found not to violate the Second Amendment. The long and short answer, if you are an American, if you believe in states' rights and if you believe in local control, is that you don't have anything to say about it because you don't live here. Who should have something to say about it under the Home Rule Act, which gives the mayor and the city council the right to make those decisions for their own residents and their own children, is us and not anybody else. Us and the courts. The courts have spoken.
Mayor Anthony Williams put it succinctly, very nicely. He says that people from other states like Texas shouldn't invoke their laws on the citizens of the District of Columbia. I think that's what...
What about the district citizens who have sued in federal court to try and get their self-defense?
They've lost. They lost in federal court.
So they shouldn't have self-defense rights in the district?
They've lost in federal court. What do you say about that? If you lose in court, and if overwhelmingly in a democracy where you live, they oppose that...
Self-defense.
Excuse me, sir. Let the congresswoman talk, please.
If you lose in court... This is a democracy where you have several chances to go at your rights. You can get them through your democratic processes. The small number of people who want to have guns loaded in their homes have lost in the arena of democracy where they live. They sued in courts. They have lost. In our country, that is the end of it.
And I repeat my question. Do they have a human right to self-defense as a fundamental right?
Do you live in another country? When in fact the democratic processes and the legal processes have said that your right to defend yourself in your home is in fact not acquitted by having loaded guns and loaded shotguns, when we find as a matter of overwhelming data that those guns are used in domestic violence and domestic quarrels and suicides and almost never to defend yourself in your home, and that is what the data overwhelmingly shows, and the jurisdiction where you live chooses, in fact, to follow that data, and the courts have indicated that there is no violation in doing so, that I think that matter is closed. It has to be closed by some process, some way, in our country. It is closed by first the democratic process and then, of course, the legal process if there is some error or some constitutional right.
Congresswoman Norton, I know you have to leave. I want to thank you very much.
My pleasure.
You had certainly a busy week this week, and I know that you're going to a busy meeting this morning, but certainly join us again.
Glad to do so.
All right, thank you very much. Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton, as we talked, Democrat for the District of Columbia. The whole thing about the gun control, or the gun ban, rather, by the House, this has happened over and over. And let's face it, Cade Bailey, what's her name, Hutchinson,
the representative from Texas?
Yeah, from Texas. I mean, NRA...
Senator, sorry.
Yeah, Senator. NRA monies have gone into her pockets. That's proven. And not only that, this is a woman got upset because she couldn't have a handgun in her own little nightstand. That's not the point. The point is here... Guns or no guns, the District of Columbia vote on leaders such as the mayor and the D.C. council. If they make a decision about this, a lot of people in the District of Columbia are very upset because of the fact that here you have one senator from Texas who has a thing about her whatever.
Self-defense right? Her right to defend herself?
Come on, Nicholas, that's a bunch of bull. I don't have a gun. I don't need self-defense rights.
That's your choice.
Well, there you go.
You're allowed to have that choice everywhere but D.C. in this country.
Excuse me. Then why should you jam down the throats of those who don't want that choice to have a gun?
I'll tell you why.
If there's a ban...
Yeah, ask me a question. I'll tell you why.
I don't need to tell you
why. Okay, then I won't tell you why.
No, please don't, because, you know. The point here is that the citizens of the District of Columbia have voted one way. This is what the lady is saying. And to be jammed down by some congresswoman who likes to shoot them up in the air, that's the problem.
I didn't know the senator liked to shoot guns in the air.
Well, she does.
I didn't know she was irresponsible.
Take my word for it. She is.
Okay. May I add something here? I really don't think Nicholas would even be satisfied with a referendum if the citizens of D.C.
Right, exactly.
Clearly and definitively said in a referendum that they didn't want.
There is a concept in American law that there are certain rights that are guaranteed by the Constitution.
Nicholas,
freedom of speech, freedom
which you have the right
religion.
To adjudicate through the legal
of,
process,
Nicholas,
and that has been ratified.
The next topic, since you are so up on topics this morning, let's talk about this president's speech on Iraq last week. Nicholas Sawalk, you take the first bite.
He didn't say anything new at all. And I think the American
You're talking
people,
about my president now.
And I think the American people are getting tired of not hearing anything new and not hearing any progress.
Did you know he had the lowest television ratings for a presidential speech in history?
It helps if you get some new material. Even comedians try and get some new material and work it in as they move forward.
Well, actually, it's not that he didn't say anything new. The things that he still isn't talking about, those things are that is new.
Well,
Think Progress did a report on the language that was used in the speech. He mentioned September 11th 5 times, freedom 21 times, weapons of mass destruction, no surprise, 0 times. I think that it's really time for him to speak in a clear, definitive voice. With if he wants to call it a success strategy, call it a success strategy. But there has to be some clear, definitive plan for how we proceed from here. There isn't one now.
I agree with Jennifer. One of the things, again, there was sort of a not-so-subtle effort to conflate September 11th and the invasion of Iraq, mentioning them as being somehow related. You know, the other issue really is, and I found this kind of humorous, was that, you know, the president and his entourage are saying, you know, we can't provide a timetable for the exit of Iraq. The Center for American Progress actually pulled up a quote from the governor when he was still Governor Bush in 1999, where the governor was saying that, it's important for the president to provide a timetable, should a war or should some kind of military action be undertaken. And it seems that now... that sort of belief has fallen by the wayside when he's been put in the actual situation. I just think, nothing new.
Okay. Jim Pomeroy, Republican. What about the president's speech? And by the way, Jim, before you do that, let me remind everybody, they can get in on this at 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. Absolutely free call. My dear friends, please give us a call. Help me out. Jim Pomeroy, Republican, I know you're going to say that the president really had an excellent speech, and you and I agree with that.
Well, look, the president was very clear. It is important to win the worldwide war against terrorism, and he is going to prosecute that war.
Abraham Lincoln said that, too.
Well, he won.
And so did John F. Kennedy.
Well,
it's nothing new.
Are these bad things to win the worldwide war against terrorism? I think it's a very positive goal, and... You know, if nothing new means a clear plan is moving forward.
What about connecting the war with 9/11?
Well, we're talking about a worldwide war on terrorism. And we were struck first, Pearl Harbor.
But Osama bin Laden committed the acts on September 11th, not Saddam Hussein. And he does keep confusing the issue. And that is not just disingenuous and dishonest. It's actually... at this point, disruptive to the process of getting the American people behind the country, behind the troops, and solving these issues, coming up with constructive solutions to these issues.
Well,
it is divisive, uh-huh. and it has a negative effect on getting the Congress.
So the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. Should we have left Germany alone?
I'm just looking for a president who tells the truth and who has an organized
plan. We're talking about 2005.
Plan. Yeah, I know. It's the same thing. It's essentially the same thing, a worldwide war against a horrible...
But isn't it true that the chair of the 9/11 commission also made a statement? He made the statement again after the networks went after him. Is there a connection? And he said, evidence has not shown to the commission that there is a connection between 9/11 and the Iraqi war.
And the president said that himself during the campaign. It's just that now he keeps confusing the... He confuses the issue whenever he has the opportunity to.
I mean, I'm not sure what's confusing about this. It's a worldwide war on terrorism.
I think that the president continues to avoid talking about a strategy for getting us out of Iraq. We're there. We have to have a plan to get out. The progress is going slowly. More and more of our troops are dying. And we need to come home.
Okay, round robin question. The point, the question is there going to be a shorter span of time for the Iraqi conflict with American troops, or are we going to find that they're going to be there for the next 5 years, as one great leader said, Eric Mickles.
You know, the Republicans.
Yes or no?
Well, I think that we will be there for several more years. Yes.
Okay.
Well, the British were there, 40 years? We'll be there probably about 10.
We'll be there as long as it takes to get enough Iraqi security forces to replace our security forces, so probably less than 5.
I agree. We'll be there until, as President Bush said, they'll stand up, we stand down.
Okay, let's go to Arlington and Anthony. Good morning, Anthony.
Hey, good morning, guys. I was just going to make a comment. This is almost turning into the D.C. Bill O'Reilly show. I'm having a hard time kind of understanding what the Republicans are saying because they never can get their points out. You kind of talk over everybody you disagree with, and I don't know. It's kind of a one-sided show today.
Well, now, are you saying the Republicans are taking over or not?
Oh, no. I think quite the opposite on this show.
Oh, I see.
I'm surrounded. I'm surrounded in this room, and thank you, sir, for your support.
The truth hurts.
That's your one supporter. Jerry, thank you very much, my friend.
Jerry, I think that, I mean, again, you've got people from a wide variety of political points here, including Nicholas, who is on the opposite issues on a lot of different points. But I think the issue is that most people see that it's clearly wrong that D.C. doesn't have voting representation in Congress. In fact, the only people who don't seem to see that are the partisan people. The Republicans who know that that D.C. is a solidly Democratic city-state.
Well, although Jim makes the good point that the Democrats have paid lip service to help in D.C. for a long time.
But in principle, I think most people feel it's an issue of fairness.
If nothing else, D.C. should not have to pay taxes. If you don't get federal representation, you shouldn't pay federal taxes.
Think for one
second, that's how
amen.
Puerto Rico
you
works.
You think for 1 second 600,000 people putting into the tax pots of America will be
no. I'm saying at a minimum, either they get represented or they pay taxes.
Well, it's better for them
my big problem
right?
is you know you don't let them have voting rights. You should at least let them defend themselves in what the third highest
Here
murder
we go
capital
again.
Of the
Here
country.
Here we go
the,
again. Let's move on, folks. The gentleman says that this is, I don't know, that it doesn't stink this morning. It must be the 4th of July weekend. We all want to go out and have a picnic. Wouldn't you agree with me, Bill?
Sounds good.
I mean,
Bill.
Well, how are you, Bill?
Bill O'Reilly.
Anyway.
Oh, you've given me a promotion. Thank you.
You get your own show.
I've lost my place on the script here. I don't even know where we are. Okay, guys, in all serious tones, 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon. New Supreme Court could alter the nation's directions. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor resigns, and Chief Justice William Rehnquist possibly expected to resign or to retire. Bush has his hands full. Will it be easy for him to get some of these people through for the Supreme Court?
The problem I see is that there's a lot of potential nominees that are actually really good judges who are pretty moderate, who are pretty normal. But everybody wants to have a fight in the Senate. They really want to have a fight. Interest groups on both sides are raising money to have a fight. So I don't care. You could renominate Sandra Day O'Connor, and there'd be a fight. And I think it's kind of sad that the process has become so political that good judges get yelled at, you know, for no reason, just because we need to have this fight.
Yeah, I felt that this morning myself. You know, I was thinking about this. The fact that It's sad that, you know, we're talking about the judicial system here. We're talking about justice.
Which is supposed to be non-political.
The laws of the land.
It's supposed to be
non-political, right. Jim Homily.
Well, I mean, you know, the president nominates and nominates a judge, and then the battle commences. I mean, this is the way we've always done it, and you know, you can say that it's more heated now. But yeah, you have a closely divided
Will Mr. Bush take a moderate look at that? Will he be much more in favor of a moderate person to fill these, especially the Sandra Day O'Connor position?
Well, you're not supposed to say this on a talk show, but I have no idea. I mean, who knows? Well, there's one man who knows who he's going to nominate, and that is President
Bush.
Well,
yeah, I know that, but I'm speaking about the fact that there are those who say that he should follow in the steps of a woman that actually was a swing vote. Do you think Mr. Bush will open the doors to that? Will he not listen to maybe his right extremists?
I hope the president picks somebody who sticks to the Constitution. That would be a novel idea in today's world.
I think the president has an opportunity here to try to reduce or at least turn down the heat a little bit on the political debate over judges. I'm not sure he'll take it. He started off when he accepted her resignation. He started off by saying that he would be consulting the Justice Department for a list. Well, we all know he probably already has the short list. And unfortunately, he didn't even throw a bone to the Senate by saying that I will also be receiving advice from the Senate. So that wasn't necessarily the most auspicious start. There certainly are lots of names that he could nominate. And ironically, because of the recent fight over Brown and Owens this week or this year, it actually could be that he could nominate somebody that would be less conservative than either of them that might have an easier way of getting through because they were so conservative.
There's the question, and I've seen this raised in political circles, is if there's going to be a fight anyway, and all signs show that there will be, strategically, the question for the president is, why doesn't he just nominate the most conservative person he thinks he can get through? Because you're going to fight over a moderate. So why not, you know, nominate somebody who can barely squeak through?
Yeah, I think, you know, the points that Nick has brought up about there being a fight are probably very realistic. But we also need to remember it was Reagan who nominated Sandra Day O'Connor.
Right.
Again, there's no guarantee, even if you choose, you know, the president chooses a moderate or liberal or conservative person, that they're going to be that way when they get on the court. A lot of times
they flip-flop.
Sort of, well, it's not, people aren't, you know, always predictable in that.
Right, like Justice Kennedy.
There are a lot of advocacy groups right now. They're rolling up their sleeves, ready to take on whatever tactics they can in this morning's news to try to get their voices heard for this election. Do you think this will have a great effect on the White House when they do send some nominees to be considered?
Well, I think, you know, in part it's you have to look at the politics of it. You have to look at, you know, how you think the confirmation battle will play out. So I would imagine the president and his staff are keeping close eye on
it. Roe versus Wade, affirmative action. What about it, Nicholas?
Well, the president can nominate pretty much anyone he wants to, as long as he doesn't nominate anyone who has actually been on record as saying that they would overturn Roe v. Wade. That's about the only giant minefield. As long as you can take anyone with any sort of judicial philosophy, as long as it looks like they're not going to go and blow up that precedent that keeps coming up,
which the American people have voted in favor of, to keep Roe versus Wade.
Well, most people don't want to mess with it.
Right.
Some people want to mess with it. And there's been a lot of laws that have pushed the other way, but the Supreme Court has been pretty solid.
Okay, let's talk to Chris in Alexandria. Good morning, Chris.
Yeah, hey, good morning. I just wanted to go back to the president's choosing to go to war in Iraq. One of your pundits had said, made a comparison to World War II. Let's get our facts right. When Japan did the sneak attack on Pearl Harbor, then Germany invoked its alliance with Japan and declared war on the United States.
I know.
That's why we went to war. There has never been any definitive proof that Saddam Hussein had any alliance with Osama bin Laden. So please don't muddy the waters again. There you go.
Okay. So you're saying...
Let me finish, sir. I will hang up.
No, no, don't hang up.
Defend yourself.
No, no, don't hang up. I'd like another go at this with you. So you're saying, sir, that if... I'm very well aware of how World War II started. So you're saying that if the Germans, who knew we were going to get, who knew we were going to respond, if they had stayed out of it, you would have been in favor of leaving Hitler in power. You would have been in favor of staying away. This is exactly what he said. This is exactly what he said.
Let me answer my question, and then I'll answer yours, please. Come on.
Okay, Mike. Here's the thing.
They didn't answer his question.
So he asked me. He asked me.
The alliance, please.
First of all, Saddam Hussein has funded plenty of terrorism. He supported terrorism. He did not. He did not around the world. It wasn't just limited to one area. Saddam Hussein was a booster of terrorism. He did not specifically probably take part in 9/11. But we're fighting a worldwide war on terrorism. And my point still stands. Just because the Japanese were the ones that bombed Pearl Harbor does not mean you leave Germany alone. Would you have left Germany alone?
Sir, here, let me bring you up to date. You have only so many troops, and now we have dedicated so many troops to this. I'm talking about not the ends. I'm talking about the means to doing it. That's the crux of the matter. Now, we chose to go to war in Iraq. And that was a flawed, the means were flawed, and I think that's very apparent. That's my only point, and don't draw false analogies.
Now, you need to answer my question. I answered your question, you said you'd answer mine.
Absolutely, yeah. Do you understand the ends and ways, the means of national security? I agree with your ends. It's the means that are in question now.
It's one of those things where we're in the middle of a war, we've got
to
win.
It's also important to understand the reasons why you go to war. Because if you don't have legitimate reasons for going to war, you lose what we're doing right now, you lose the peace. You have to have a constructive process for resolving war and conflict. That does not happen if you go to war under vague false pretenses. Exactly.
So how do you get rid of Saddam Hussein then?
Chris, go ahead. Excuse me, everybody. Go right ahead, Chris.
Back to the gentleman's question. I agree. We are in the middle of a situation that we can't back out of. The question is, we have to have some constructive criticism here and not continue to muddy the water. So I genuinely respect the gentleman's dedication to winning this war, and I agree with him. But let's have some constructive discussion and not muddy the waters by invoking freedom 21 times, by invoking terrorism 5 times. Let's get out there, let's see what the plan is, and let's do it in a way that strengthens our democracy and not obscure the issue. And I will now be quiet and let the gentleman answer the rejoinder.
No, his time is up. He has enough to say, you know. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank
Have
you,
a man. Good day. Okay. 301-230-0980, #980 on the Verizon Wireless System. To the gentleman who called earlier to say that the show is one-sided, I disagree with him because we have a libertarian. His name is Nicholas Sawalk. He always disagrees with me. Also, we have a person from the Green Party, although we haven't heard from them since Ralph Nader, but Nader was kicked out, but now they're trying to come back. Anyway, his name is Eric Mickelson. And then we have a representative from the party that has lost in American politics twice, and Al Gore is still trying to rebound. We don't know where they are, but they're hiding. They're just hoping. Is the Party of Hope a Democrat? And we have with us Jennifer Doggett. And we also have my good buddy Jim Pomeroy, who I have the highest respects for because he has a direct line to the White House. And I want to get a job. And I'm trying to get a job there. So therefore, Jim Pomeroy, we are very, very diversified on this panel. Wouldn't you say, panelists?
Absolutely.
I agree. Sure.
Thank you very much. Of course, Nicholas Sawalk doesn't agree.
Because
I don't have a gun. Anyway, our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980, and all of our Verizon country. Catherine in West Virginia. Good country, good weather up there, Catherine. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting that you all were talking first with the congresswoman that was there.
Uh-huh.
I was trying to call you then, but I couldn't get through because I was in a no-power area in Virginia.
Right.
But not to go backward, but I really did want to make a comment about that because I'm one of those types of people who believe that if you hear both sides of an argument, you at least can make a better decision for yourself of what you agree with or don't agree with. Mm-hmm. And as much as I enjoyed listening to the congressman, I would have actually fully enjoyed that entire debate had I heard the other side of it as well with the equal amount of time. And I kind of agreed with the caller that said that it is kind of one-sided, not about every issue, but about some issues. And it is important for us as people who listen and as people who are making good decisions and people who go to the polls and people who want their First Amendment rights, you know, held up. We want to know both sides of that story. And I think if we could do a better job at that, I would enjoy continuing to listen to the station every week.
I think because every argument may have multiple sides doesn't mean that all of the sides have equal legitimacy. And I think, again, if you want to hear the opposite side, it basically consists of, I'm a Republican. I don't want the Democrats to have two additional senators and one additional voting member of the House. They're going to invoke things like, oh, it's in the Constitution. It's been this way for years and years. If you live in D.C. and don't like that, move to Maryland or Virginia, blah, blah, blah. But really, the argument, I think, comes down to it's a fact of pure partisanship.
Well, we can go back to why it's in the Constitution. And it's in the Constitution because there's this thought that the people who benefit most from a larger federal government shouldn't be able to vote for a larger federal government. That was the initial concept in putting it. It was also so that no state had greater leverage by having the capital city, because they had that problem with New York when New York had it. So those are the two reasons why it was in the Constitution. They may not be true anymore, and I support voting rights for the district. But to be fair, that's why. That's how we got here.
Historically.
The question is, do we stay here or do we move on?
And that's so interesting because I literally did not have I didn't in my mind have an opinion of whether they should or shouldn't, as much as I wanted to understand both sides so that I could very possibly, you know, create an opinion. And I appreciate you giving me a little bit more background just so I could actually understand more. And I'm on the back end of this because I moved recently to this area, so I wasn't aware of a lot of other things going on in D.C., and that's not anything for discussion today, but I appreciate you giving me a little more background. Just so that I could know what all the issues really are.
So, Catherine, we are fair.
Well, yeah, but I had to call again.
Well, that's the whole point. That's the reason why we want you
to call.
That's
how we stay fair.
That's what we call getting a call in. Thank you
very
much, Catherine.
That's cool. I'm using the minutes for you.
All right, lots of love to you.
Keep it fair. Thanks a lot.
Lots of love to you.
Bye-bye.
Nothing like West Virginia, boy. I tell you, they speak high in West Virginia. Let's go on the cell phone. Christy, good morning.
Hi, morning.
Christy, you got about 30 seconds, please.
I feel really bad that I'm going back to this, but I was just going to say that in terms of the war on terrorism, it's hard to compare it to Germany and Japan because terrorists aren't a state in themselves. Like, there's no Osama bin Laden country. So how do you go against Osama bin Laden, but then say you're going for Iraq? Like, they're just not...
And the Hitler references and the Germany references and the World War II references are just really, at this point, not helpful.
Of course they are.
It's ideological hyperbole that is not based in fact.
Thank you, Christy.
No problem. Have a good afternoon.
All right.
Let's make one thing clear. I mean, quite frankly, the fact that there is no one specific country makes my analogy even more important, which is you can't limit it to attacking one or two countries. You have to go and root out terrorism everywhere.
Richard in Gaithersburg, you have the final word, and you have 20 seconds to do it, sir.
Well, on the Second Amendment, of course, the liberals are anti-choice. They don't want me to have the right to protect my family, and they don't want me to have the right to educate my children.
Right.
I would like to have that choice. But on the terrorism, we were hit regularly. My building was blown up in 1972 when I was with my wife going to the movies. Fortunately, I left at work early. Every month they hit us. Look at the 70s, 80s, 90s. We were hit regularly in the 90s. You want to see if this is working? How long has it been? This is the longest time since I can remember that terrorists have not hit us.
Richard, I hate to do this to you, my friend, but I've got to go. He made his point, though. Okay? Would you agree with Jim?
Sure.
All right. Are we fair, Eric?
Nick. And yeah, we are.
Oh, that's Eric. Yes, I agree with Nick. We are fair. And all sincerity, I want to thank our guests this morning, our panelists, for coming in on the 4th of July weekend, certainly. And like you said, you know, it may be one-sided, but the fact that it's open debate, and so therefore there's never one side, it's all sides being heard. Eric Mickelson, thank you very much. Jennifer Doggin, thank you very much. Nicholas Sawalk and Jim Pomley, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
See you next month.
Right here. Happy Independence Day,
Jerry. Got to thank those who helped to put it together very quickly. Steve Solomon is our technical producer. Carolina Restrepo, our research administration. Shaheen Shaheen, public affairs associate. And our journalism intern from George Washington University is Jill Sankin. Metro Talk is a WBIG and WTEM public affairs presentation from Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C. I'm Jerry Phillips. Happy 4th of July. Happy birthday, America. Much peace, much love.
WBIG-FM.